Hello again, this is Peter Twist with this week's edition of the Internet Marketing Lounge radio show. Welcome along. Well, today's show, we feature our good friend Clay Cotton, who will be expanding on his theory of value worthy of devotion. Armin Moran joins us, Steve Keeges from Million Dollar Systems. He'll be telling us about the myth. David Da Vinci, the security expert, is back with us, telling us about some more security breaches. And we're also joined by marketing veteran Jim Straw. And Paul Riley explains viral marketing. That's all coming up in this week's edition of the program. And first up, here's Clay Cotton to tell us about value worthy of devotion.
It's something that I'm paying more attention to now as I develop the concept. The idea behind this is that online, attention is everything. People don't have the patience to hang around for something that isn't worthy of their attention, or even a split second, they'll click away. And so you can only keep people's attention if you offer them value worthy of their devotion. And they're devoting their attentions on a second-by-second basis. And so you really have to give first and prove your worth in order to keep their attention, or the promise of a value to them. It can be the promise. You can be seducing them and leading them along with a promise of value, but you certainly have to put yourself in the shoes or in the mind of your visitor or your viewer. A good book along those lines is a book called Positioning for Your Mind, which was by Al Rice and Jack Trout, about 20-year-old book or so, Positioning. And I think one of them wrote a new one called The New Positioning. It's about battling for the mind of the consumer, and that battle takes place on a global basis with the Fortune 500 companies, that Procter & Gamble, Ford, Coca-Cola versus Pepsi, McDonald's versus Burger King. They're all battling these large brands for the mind of the consumer. And online, we are battling not so much for the brand, the branding that those companies are seeking so much. We're battling for their instantaneous attention. The currency of that is value, I believe. You must provide value worthy of their devotion. That's the only way you can keep them on your website or involved with your relationship. They're not going to stick around for a relationship that isn't valuable to them.
As always, thanks, Clay, for that. Now let's cross to Armin Moran. I mean, it's been proven that if you have a good-looking e-book cover, then that's going to improve your sales.
But that, and there's many of my customers. This is where I started listening to my customers more, now that I had customers. I could actually go in and they would tell me or ask me a question is, where can I have an e-book cover? I did figure out how to do this. I figured out how to create the e-book covers. In fact, I was selling them at one time on the Internet. I found some graphic artists, and these guys are great. The graphic artists that are out there, I mean, they're awesome. Because, you know, it does certainly take an eye to create these covers. You have to have some kind of artistic ability. But I found that many of the graphic artists, for what they do, I mean, they get paid very well, and they rightfully so. Because it does take a bit of time, and I know some of them take several days to create one particular cover. Because it's a work of art to them. The more realistic you make it, the more people are going to view, oh, that's a book. So that's a CD box. Yeah. And they're going to be, again, more apt to buy it. You know, studies have shown that, as you mentioned earlier, you know, it'll increase your sales by up to 300%.
Exactly, exactly.
Just by having a graphic of your on your site.
Yeah.
So why not make it look as best you possibly
exactly.
can?
Exactly. Armin Moran. Well, Steve Keeges used to work in the dentistry business. He then moved on to the internet business. And I asked him about his theory, which is the myth.
I think one of the big stopping points, people, they look at something, a career or, you know, a business or something that that they want to accomplish in their life. And I can speak to this personally also, but so many people, we say, well, we don't know enough to do that. Can't get on the internet because I don't know enough. I can't become a research writer because I don't know enough. I don't know this. And a lot of those things are true up to a point. Especially when we start talking about the internet, people get so bogged in the technical issues of putting up a web page, designing it, coming up with the correct copy, moving things here and there. They're all intricate parts, and they're all very important, but there's so many resources out there to help get those things done. The business owner, the person who's doing the site, their real business is to learn how to market it and drive traffic.
Because one thing I noticed when I started to learn about the internet was, and I think it's a trait that we have as human beings, is the minute we learn something, we take it on board, but then we kind of forget that we didn't know it before. And you can fool yourself into thinking that you still don't know enough about a subject, can't you?
That can go on forever. Like, yeah. When do you know enough about a subject to do something? As a French horn player, as someone who's going to go and stand in front of 2,000, 3,000 people, playing a concerto, I mean, when do you all of a sudden become good enough? When do you get a diploma that says, now you're good enough to do this? I can tell you, I mean, many years going by saying, I'm not good enough, there has to be a time when you say, I'm going to take the amount of knowledge that I have now, and I'm going to put it into action today, and I'm going to see where it gets me.
In my view of successful and famous people, I think especially famous people are some of the most insecure people you could ever meet, because they feel they're not good enough, and you must have seen a lot of that with the professional musicians even that you work with.
Yes, absolutely, and you know, most musicians are very insecure, you know, and in a way, they have a right to be. I mean, it's a very judged profession. When you stand on stage and you have thousands of people looking at you or have a microphone shoved in your face, it's either you do well now or you don't. And there's a lot of pressure in that.
And do you still find that companies are coming to you with these wrong ideas about how to do business?
Companies and individuals and, you know, everyone has their own goals and they want certain things out of life. And this fellow who came to me was just laid off and now he needs a way to earn some money and he had this idea about selling cameras on the internet.
Mm.
You know, I'd love him to be wildly successful at it. But to be able to do that, he has to answer those two really important questions.
Mm.
First of all, are there people out there that want what you have? Yes, there are. But how are you going to get them? Where are they hanging out? And why are they going to buy cameras from you and not go over to Amazon and buy cameras?
So tell me, what would you say to somebody now, not so much a big business that's going to come to you, but say if an individual is listening to us now and they're thinking about getting onto the internet, because after all, we don't want to frighten people away too much as well. Any initial advice you give to people?
The advice, when people call me, I mean, I'm really honest with people as far as what they have, what they want to bring to market. The more unique the product, the more success people will have on the internet.
Right.
Instead of thinking really wide, think of narrow. So instead of, you know, cameras, is there a certain area in cameras that you could be the expert on? Instead of gardening, is there a certain, maybe it's going to be water gardening.
Yeah.
Is there a certain aspect of that you could be an expert on?
Thanks a lot, Steve. And I also forgot to mention that Steve, before getting into the dentistry business, was a very famous French horn player as well. So it's amazing how many different walks of life people come from to get into the internet business. Well, this man has been in the security business, especially on the internet and with computers, for the last 16 years. It's David DaVinci. He's the creator of cybersecurity. And just a footnote here, this interview was recorded in June, so things may have been improved or may have progressed since then.
When you enter my world, I basically need to know every little security thing that's happening on the internet all the time. So I'm on all the mailing lists that deal with that sort of topic, and deal in the news groups and on basically every form of communication that you can have on the internet to check up on these things all the time.
Mm.
And when I'm talking to the other key people who are doing things on the internet, who are finding the bugs in Windows and Internet Explorer and Outlook Express and all those kinds of programs, and they're notifying Microsoft, what's a really frightening trend that I've noticed is that sometimes there can be a large bug or a large issue that they find, and they notify Microsoft without notifying anybody else, because if it's notified on a public list, you know, a really clever hacker or cyber terrorist could be on there and start exploiting that, right? So they do what they feel is the right thing, and they just call Microsoft or they just send them emails. And this one guy had sent 12 emails to Microsoft and had waited 3 weeks, and Microsoft had not yet even responded to him about a very serious issue. And this is not the only case like that at all. In fact, the newer case that I'm talking about, which happened June 4th, that this was released, again, this affects all versions of Internet Explorer. If you go to an Internet site that's created in a malicious way, the hacker can run any file they want on your computer. Now, that's incredibly frightening, because that can be an incredibly malicious file. Well, what does that really impact? Let's put it in perspective. When did Microsoft start putting Internet Explorer with computers?
David Da Vinci. Thanks, David. Well, now I'm going to turn to one of my friends, Louis Allport, who's in the similar kind of business where he interviews experts online. And he's allowed me to share this interview with you that he did with Jim Straw. Now, over the past 30 years, Jim has written well over 300 books, booklets, manuals, reports, courses, and articles about doing business, all based on his own personal hands-on experience. His writings are specific methods, techniques, and approaches for doing business that anyone can use to start or expand their business. And now, Jim, in talking to Louis, explains about testing your sales letter.
You have to have the right keys in your sales material in order to make the sales. I once wrote a beautiful sales piece. I thought it was absolutely the best thing I'd ever written. Showed it to everyone in the office. All of them praised it. I didn't even test it. I rolled out with 10,000 piece mailing. I got one order. So the product was good, but the ad copy wasn't worth a darn. As a member of Mensa with a high IQ, I had a friend read my sales copy for that piece, and he wrote me back and said, only two people in the world can understand it, you and me. So you can't get too smart for your customers. You have to be able to speak their language at their level. So the ad copy is 99% of your business has to be your advertising. Now, of course, if you have good advertising and bad product, it doesn't help you very much, because then your refund rate is so high that, and your complaint rate gets higher and higher, so you end up with more problems than a business.
I imagine you reworked that piece of advertising. So how did you develop it after that?
Well, it was just a matter of testing. That's the name of the game in mail order. The only reason that an old pro like me is an old pro is because I test everything. Since 1999, when I set up our website, I have tested just about everything and anything you can imagine on when emails should be mailed, what they should say, what part of them are most important, what time of the day to mail, what day of the week to mail.
Okay.
Because each of those items are important to the success of your mailings, whether it be direct mailing or emailing.
Right.
And every element of it has to be tested, retested, and then tested some more. That's how you end up with the winners. You find something that works and keep it as a control. A control is a piece that you know that if you mail it, you'll get X percentage or X dollars profit on each mailing. Then you mail a split mail where you mail your control and a new test piece so that the test piece says something different, and see how it produces against something you know is already producing. And you keep doing that, testing the different elements until you come up with your best-selling pieces.
Okay. Is it possible you could give me an example?
Yeah, I have a report out there, How to Make a Fortune Just Snooping Around. And I have run 7 different test emails producing at various levels. I ended up with one that produced a significant amount of orders each time I put it out. So I kept that as my control. 2 weeks ago, I tested a new piece against it, and I pulled twice as many orders. So that's now my control.
Thanks a lot, Louis and Jim, for that. And we'll be featuring more of that interview in the next couple of weeks. One question that I get asked a lot is, what is viral marketing? Well, I thought I'd put that question to the man who over the last couple of months or even year has been seen as a viral marketing expert. He's Paul Riley, and he now explains all about it.
To quote the obvious example, the term was coined around Hotmail by the venture capitalist who invested the money in the Hotmail system. Basically, what happens is an email is sent out by the user of the system, and at the bottom of the email there's an advert with a call to action to get your free private email here at Hotmail, click here, which then brings more users back into the system. I mean, that was the actual system that the term was coined around, but there are so many different examples of viral marketing around the web. Basically, it uses the principles of word of mouth, where you can refer new business into the loop. There are various different types of viral model, of course, but basically the general theme is that you can create a viral sales message, a message that then replicates and continues to proliferate through the web. There are all sorts of different factors that affect the way the message travels and the speed that it travels at and the distance that you can reach, but basically you're switching from a linear marketing system to a non-linear or exponential marketing system. MLMs are everywhere you go. And also, two-tier affiliate programs have been, by definition, a multi-level marketing system. The second tier being the referral element, and the first tier being the direct sales element. Again, very viral indeed, and proven systems to create huge amounts of business for all types of products, be they consumer-oriented or business-orientated. With viral marketing came actually from a hobby of mine, being music, producing dance music and organizing club nights as a promoter, working with studios and also in live situations. So that was my background, the musical background, and then it was through quite a freak mistake, it was quite a happy accident really, where an email that I sent out to some free MP3s went viral, so to say, so the word is, generated a ridiculous amount of traffic. And at that point, I realized that I could go from 0 to 100 in a click of a mouse rather than working the search engines and playing ping pong with countless other search engine optimization people. An analogy that I found based on my background with music and sound engineering was that if you feed back an audio signal, this might sound a bit odd to the people who don't understand, but here's an analogy. Jimi Hendrix, yeah? Everyone remember that man.
Mm-hmm.
When he hit those strings in front of the speaker, the signal that came from the speaker vibrated the strings and created what was called feedback. And I think Jimmy, I'm too young to have seen the guy live, but he was one of the first guitarists to start using feedback as part of the music. Viral marketing can, in many ways, is analogous. If you can feed back a percentage of your users into creating referrals and thus creating more signal and making what would be, in the music analogy, making the signal scream, then that's key to a successful viral campaign. If you can make the average number of referrals per user multiplied by your conversion or the losses in the signal, as it would be in the analogy, that's a model of a successful viral.
Thanks, Paul, and you can subscribe to his viral marketing newsletter by going along to his website for more information. Well, that's about all we have time for this week in the Internet Marketing Lounge. It's been very good of you to join us again this week. Bye-bye.